edition of The Break. We're live from the SWBC Mortgage Studios at the Star, presented by Miller Lite, the only beer of the Dallas Cowboys. And today we start talking Cowboys versus Colts. We'll get you ready. Brian has his updates for us there. We'll talk about some things regarding that matchup, particularly the Indianapolis offense versus the Dallas defense. Before we get to that, though, I did want to talk about one transaction that happened yesterday. Cowboys release Terrell Basham. He was inactive against the Giants. Spent a lot of this season on injured. Was he on injured reserve or just out?
Yeah, he was injured.
On injured reserve. So hadn't really played a ton for them this year. Why now? Why make the move now?
Well, it sounds like, last week was kind of interesting because they put Tack McKinley up from, they called him up, which you can only get three of these. So they called him up and then didn't play him. So that was kind of weird. And I think it was mainly because they're trying to figure out, look, all these guys that were sick and do they need him or not. So you wouldn't waste the call up if you were going to keep doing that with him. He's going to get moved up at some point. So McKinley, I think that's the one of the reasons there. I mean, main reason is he's not playing that great. I mean, he's not. They got so many guys. I mean, how many pass rushers do you need?
Not even about playing great. He's just not playing, right?
He's not playing, and he's not better than, you know. I mean, I think he's comparable to Fowler, but they like Fowler better, and he's got more production. So, but McKinley, I think, is the big reason.
You know, I was going to say that it was surprising to me, and when I think back, okay, this happened, and then the Tristan Hill situation, and then going back to where – before the deadline for trading, and where we were thinking, okay, who were some guys that you could possibly use to trade, to form some kind of trade to bring somebody in? It's just interesting to think that you would just get rid of two guys that you've talked about, even if he wasn't playing. He's a guy whose name was mentioned quite a lot. You saw some talent and potential there, but to think that it was just, you know, neither of those two guys, specifically defensive ends, or at the defensive line, that you kind of got some use out of them and just kind of decided to get rid of them.
Yeah, played really well in the preseason, if you remember. Yep. It was one of those things where you're kind of training camp, you were like going him, Armstrong, those guys, you were kind of like, oh, maybe they've got something here, you know. Then you start to think about, well, Sam Williams and, you know, Fowler and all that. And I think Nick is dead on right. This was more about wanting to see Tack McKinley play. You know, this is about, like, trying to find a way to you know, get him potentially on the field. Dan Quinn has a little bit of a history with him, you know, understands his game. And, you know, maybe it could help you a little bit in some of that the combo of being a run defender and also being a pass rusher. And to Ambar's point, too, I know talking to a lot of guys around the league during the trading deadline, though, that Basham's name was being thrown out there. Mm-hmm. That was a name that people, like, had a couple of teams say, yeah, you guys are kind of moving some guys. I'm like, really? And, you know, Basham was one of the name. And they end up moving on from guys that were on that, you know, on that trade deadline. That, you know, when you talk about, you know, with Tristan Hill, they're okay, we move on from him. And then Basham, well, hey, we got a guy. We like what we're seeing in the guy. And let's give him a go here. So not surprising in that way.
It's three guys, really. If you think about back to the preseason, you're like, okay, Basham, and then Tristan Hill and Ridgeway. I mean, Ridgeway was a guy that they thought, oh, he was going to make it, you know. Yeah. But Bohanna played better. This is other guys just played better. And Sam Williams is development is a big part of this too.
They might have made a mistake on Ridgeway because
he's starting, isn't he?
Well, yeah, and I'm
playing over.
Yeah, he's playing over there. Yeah, I mean, he's making tackles.
Makes plays. Yeah.
See, that's the thing that
more plays in Arkansas.
They were keeping the wide receivers. You know, they kept that wide receiver room kind of intact, and then, you know, they kept all those guys, and then all of a sudden you're like, well, these guys are playing just okay, you know, and then you sacrifice a defensive tackle that when you're struggling against the run, and not all of it is inside, but you're maybe a guy that down the line, you know, and Nick, you know, covers Arkansas, loves Arkansas. I've seen a guy play a bunch. I mean, he was a kind of a difference maker as a big guy in there. And you're kind of like thinking, well, why you get rid of an offensive defensive lineman? And then they go off and play. And then you're looking at your wide receiver situation, you go, well, you just could have very easily moved on from, you know, one of these guys.
Well, cut Tristan Hill if you're going to cut him eventually. I mean, just let him go. Yeah.
I think they got caught in a situation where if they were to do that over, they wouldn't put Ridgeway out there. They just wouldn't have done it.
Well, it goes to what you were talking about yesterday. Coaches tend to like what they know, right?
Yeah.
And so you get in a situation like that where you're kind of debating Tristan Hill or Ridgeway, and they're probably like, yeah, you know, I think we want to give Tristan Hill a little bit more of an opportunity. We think we might have something.
Well, see, and I also talked to some teams last night. I think Basham is going to get claimed. Just from listening to some teams, some of the guys that I talked to around the league, they're like, well, what did, you know, is he a bad guy? I'm like, no. Training camp, everything, you know, they were asking me my opinion on him, and, you know, they'd studied the tape on him. So I have a feeling today that you guys will probably write a little blip that he got claimed by somebody. Listen to what, talking to guys from last night.
There are obviously a few. Go ahead.
Can I throw one more thing? Sure. I say that about Tack McKinley, and I do believe McKinley's going to play, but they could still elevate him a couple times. Yeah. His roster spot, they have 52. That roster spot by Basham may not go to McKinley. It could go to James Washington, who, because he's not on the practice squad, you could just move him over if they decide to do that. They have to do that today, and if that's what they're going to do, maybe they could. So,
is today a deadline?
I just think that they've talked about it. I mean, James Washington.
Yes, but they're going to activate the 21-day window practice, right?
But he could play if you want him to.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying McKinley may not be the 53rd right now, but him playing and getting on the field with reps is probably
a, you know, this whole thing with Odell Beckham and Washington, I really do believe that they were tied together. Because I didn't think they wanted to make two moves for wide receivers. Mm-hmm. I just really didn't. And maybe it's one of those things where they're preparing themselves for getting him practice time and getting him ready and getting him acclimated again. In like, okay, if the Beckham thing doesn't work out, then we'll plug him in. But I was talking to somebody in the team, and they're like, they're really not connected. But I just, you know, making two moves at wide receiver, you know, to add Beckham and then to have to add Washington.
Yeah.
You're like, I just didn't think they wanted to do that.
How many veteran receivers that don't play special teams do you need? One's really dynamic, obviously, but he may not be ready yet. That's the whole thing is about what's the knee look like.
There's teams, by the way, there's people around the league that I'm talking to again last night that believe that Beckham's going to end up in Buffalo. There's people saying that they feel like that he could very well end up in Buffalo. That's the last of the last things. I had a guy tell me, he said, listen, you think he wants to go to New York and play on that turf? He was complaining about the turf. The Giants lost somebody, lost a receiver, lost a player on the turf, got all messed up. And you're like, the guy goes, you think he wants to go play on that turf after he's complaining about it?
Better in Buffalo?
But the thing about it is they're saying because Buffalo's medical staff might just clear him. And maybe that you'll get others will be like maybe Dallas would be a little bit more, well, the knee's not really this. And, I mean, nobody's going to know this because we talked about this yesterday. You could bring him in and all that, but I had people tell me, you know, is he going to work out for you? Is he going to go out on the field and physically work out for you? That's how you would tell. You could pull on and push on the knee and all that. But the guy told me around in the league, he says, when has a veteran player ever gone in and worked out for somebody like that?
It's been a while.
Yeah.
But I don't know that that's necessarily a precursor here. Honestly, the way I look at this, as much as we've heard Jerry talk about the fact that they are definitely in this
question,
and they want him.
Yeah.
I don't know that that would be the thing that stopped them from saying, like, I think they want their medical staff, obviously, to look at the
absolutely.
Knee. I don't know that getting him to do a workout is necessarily a precursor. And quite frankly, the way I look at it is, there's a chance he goes to Buffalo.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, he's going to go to Buffalo before he comes to Dallas. But also, I'm hearing from a lot of people, and I heard Michael Irvin this morning talking on Sean and RJ on 105.3 The Fan. And he was like, hey, I know Odell. I've talked to him. I've talked to his family.
Sure.
He has always wanted to play in Dallas.
Sure.
That has been something he's always wanted to do because of the fact he's got family here, and he's just always wanted to play for this team.
Sure.
So there's a lot of factors here.
No question. I mean, I'm on the 75% train of him being here.
Yeah.
But the more you talk to people around the league, there's doubt.
But here's the thing. The way I look at it is, I always look at it like, who's going to be doing the selling? I don't know who's doing the selling in Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
I know the guy doing the selling here. He's probably one of the best salesmen I've ever met. So I'm going to bet on the fact that if it comes down to selling, and if he really wants him, if he really wants him, I don't think there's – I think he'll probably end up landing.
Can I ask you a question? This might be unfair to you then since you've taken that approach. Do you worry about Jerry override – do you worry about the situation where if Jerry wants the guy, he gets the guy? Do you think he gets any interference from Steven on this one?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. I mean, I think at the end of the day,
I know it's probably an unfair question.
No, but I think I think, and I know there's a lot of talk about Jerry, Steven, that whole dynamic.
Sure.
Let's be honest. At the end of the day, if Jerry really wants something,
I totally agree.
I don't care who in the building, including Steven, that doesn't want it.
I agree.
Jerry is still in the position where he is the final say.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And let's not forget that's a good thing. I mean, like. Him, everyone knows the story. He pushed him up against the wall against, you know, with Deion, and is this a smart move and all this kind of stuff. But, I mean, you know, you don't have Zach Martin and you have Johnny Manziel. If somebody doesn't stand up to Jerry sometimes and go, this isn't the best move for us. So it's not the worst thing in the world to have a guy that says, all right, let's think about this long term. You know,
and because, they still got Deion.
Yeah. Well, they got Deion, but you might do whatever it takes to get Odell Beckham. And then, March comes and you're like, dang, we lost Pollard. We lost this guy. Right. We lost this guy. Well, we don't have the money, but you got Odell, who played two games for you and limped around for a little bit. You know, I mean, like, somebody has to think about next year.
Yep.
And I know everyone's just focused all in, but that's not the way it works.
Let me ask you guys something. And since we don't know what's going to happen, and we've seen it before with, like, Earl Thomas, we talked about him since forever. He never actually happened. We know this is something
that's on Seattle,
very
by the
well.
Way.
Yeah. Well, different reasons.
I know that for fact, yeah.
But in an instance that it does not happen for whatever reason, based on what you've seen so far since Dak's return and how the offense has been operating, do you guys currently feel that this offense, specifically talking about the wide receiver position, is this offense enough to be competitive to that level without the need of adding extra talent at the wide receiver? Has your mind changed whatsoever so far?
Remember that question we had yesterday about who's going to help you more, Tyron Smith or Odell Beckham? Yeah, see, that's the thing I look at to answer your question. I just focus back to the Green Bay game and that 4th-and-3. And I just know this guy can go and make plays. I mean, can he make 2-3 of those a game? Mm-hmm. That might be all you need.
Yep.
You know, that might be all you need. He might have 5 targets. Nick went through the targets with you yesterday. It seemed like it was 11, and it was 5, it was 3, it was 5, it was 7. It was kind of – if I know that 5 times I'm going to throw him the ball and he's going to probably catch the ball all 5 times, I have a feeling they're going to be big, big, big plays. Mm-hmm. I do. I just feel like 3rd down, 4th downs, you know, the way that this coach goes for it, you know – throw it, this guy separates in the red zone. You know, you can throw the ball to him down there. He's going to make somebody miss. I'm the guy that is. I'm about pushing the chips now, and I think the owner is too.
Yep.
I think the owner, and that's why I asked Derek that question, because I think the owner will tell Steven, it's like, listen, I'm 80 years old. Have you seen what's going on in this conference right now? Brady ain't worth a damn right now. Rodgers ain't even part of this thing. We got to go beat San Francisco or Philadelphia, who we almost beat with a backup quarterback and 3 turnovers.
Yeah, give me everything I got.
Yeah. You got to give me this one last shot here. You figure this thing out. If, like Nick told you, which was great information yesterday, if you have Beckham contract, you got to think about CD contract too. Yeah, that's great information right there. You know, I'm looking at him like, you figure it out. You figure it out. I'm 80 damn years old. You know?
Yeah.
I might not have another run at this again.
Yep.
You know, you figure this out.
And I think the thing about it, too, is God, I lost my thought. I was just going to
Let me just jump in then, because I think Will McClay has to factor into this as well and project. Okay, how old is Odell? I don't even know.
30 years old.
Okay, so 31, 32. 30,
ain't crazy old.
33-year-old. Yeah. Yeah. Odell Beckham, you know, if he wants this 3-4 year deal, right.
That's my story because I want the player.
Right. No, but I think it's important though to look at what he's going to do next year, the year after. I mean, this is an investment. This is what you know. I kind of compare it to the Deion Sanders thing. He's played 7-8 years, but we're doing this for that last half of his career, the last few years, last big contract for him. It's not just about these few games. Does he fit into what you're trying to do for the next couple of years?
Yeah,
I think that's what they have to figure out.
I will throw this out. I just remember what I was trying to say. I still believe I'm being cautiously optimistic because that we talked about this weeks ago. And I said, at the time, I was one of the people like, I don't know about this kind of signing. Because what I still don't know is he Odell Beckham Jr. that I'm used to seeing? We don't know that.
Yeah.
And so if
neither
he is,
them.
If he is, this will be a signing that could definitely put them over the top to answer your question. This is the kind of signing that you get a guy like this, I guarantee you it can pay dividends if he is the Odell Beckham that he was. Because it certainly did for the Rams. In that Super Bowl, he was having a game before he
on
got
his
hurt.
Way to be an MVP.
Oh,
probably.
Yeah, he was having a game. And so you add that kind of player to what you already have. Now I look at this offense and say, man, is the offense as good as the defense? Maybe they are, right? And that's where you're really working with something. You can contend with the teams like Philadelphia, like San Francisco, like the Chiefs, like the Bills. Like, you have that level of talent where you can compete with all those teams and don't feel in any way that you're compromised. I think he can provide that kind of value for you if he's Odell Beckham that he was before.
Remember when we were waiting for Dak's return and the thumb, and you asked the question about, like, okay, is 90% Dak better than what you got with 100% Cooper Rush and what he was doing at the time? So same question, what would be the least amount of percentage that you would take an Odell Beckham Jr. for?
You're not supposed to ask questions. Those are my questions.
Hey.
No, that's for my
question.
Games. What are you doing? I'm going to use that on the radio today, by the way. I'm going to use that on the radio. I'm going to steal it. I'll give you credit there.
Take it.
AG.
I don't know. First of all, let's think about it like this. He's going to be, if you think he's going to be your third wide receiver, we talked about that yesterday, where he falls on the depth chart. Let's say he's at least your third wide receiver. I do think an 80% Odell Beckham Jr. is probably better than Noah Brown, right? So he adds value to you at 80%, maybe 75%.
I was going around 65 myself.
You're at 65.
I am, just because I feel like, though, there could be those two or three plays a game.
Yep.
There could be that, you know, it's you know, they run the ball. Oh, wait, it's now third and six, you know, and now you need, okay, he's going to shake somebody for a gain of 8 or shake somebody for 10. You know, and then you're going to keep playing the game. And then, they're going to get down the goal line, and it's going to be like it was like in the other day, third and 15. They have to throw a clutch pass to Dalton Schultz to convert. Man, you got a guy like Beckham, you know, it's maybe 65%, catches that ball, beats somebody, you know, gets separation, a little bit easier throw. That's kind of what I'm thinking about.
I think it's a great question, but I also think in a way it's irrelevant because Odell's going to want 100% of the money. 100% of the contract that he wants. So,
if it takes you where you want to go, which
true,
is the Super Bowl,
true.
You
and, will. And that's why I go back to what I said about the next year and the next year. Like, if you think, okay, we'll see what he can do. Can he help you a little bit, a couple plays a game like that? But then the next year, like, you've got a really dynamic receiver.
Yeah, that's where I'm at, though, too. To me, I'm willing to, as a fan, I would be willing for them to try. You know, if you just try for me, you know, and if it doesn't work out, I can't blame you. You tried.
Right.
You know, as a fan, you're like, you can't call into our show here, 105.3, and yell and say, oh, the Cowboys suck. They don't do, you know, no, you can't because they tried.
I can. I can do a little bit, though. If you pay him really good money to come in at the end of the season and do this, and then we'll see what happens in the next couple of years, then you should have kept Amari Cooper. That's what I view. You should have kept Amari Cooper if that's what you want. Because I think Amari Cooper is probably better than Odell Beckham right now.
Yeah, but my issue with that is that I don't think they got rid of Amari Cooper, I think, because they just didn't want him on this team. And that wasn't necessarily about – and I didn't have a problem with them making that move. The problem I had was they didn't go in and get me more talent. If you're saying this particular guy doesn't fit our culture, he doesn't fit what we're trying to do, right? Okay, fine. That's your choice. But don't just assume that you're going to leave that vacuum.
But then I need you to explain that. I mean, if that's the case, then explain what he doesn't do for your culture. He's a quiet guy that doesn't really ruffle feathers. He wanted to take a pay cut. He gets open. He's a good route runner. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, I don't know.
Well, we know the elephant in the room. That you can start with, but I mean, maybe it's all those things.
Maybe.
The point is, they're not
going to
come out and say
general manager.
They're not going to come out and say that.
Yeah.
But the point is, I do.
What are you really saying, Bert Bryant?
I took a page out of your book.
the point is, they're not. They didn't go out and spend the money that they saved. If you're going to save that money because you just didn't think he was the fit,
yeah,
then go out and spend the money and get a replacement. Because yeah, we see they are clearly in the market for a wide receiver.
But they will tell you that they got better on defense because they got rid of him.
Yeah,
maybe.
They will tell you because we were able to sign him and the Randy Gregory and all that. They will tell you. Yeah. They will be quick to tell you that the money we saved on all this, we got better on defense.
Because those guys are helping. I mean, yeah. And Hooker and Fowler and Armstrong and – and you know, James Washington, not so much, but I mean, but those guys, you know,
season would have been lost had they not been the way that they have been on defense, especially when you had Cooper Rush in it. And Cooper Rush did a nice job, but man, I don't even want to think of how many games we would have lost.
You'd look like the Packers. Right, you'd be like the Packers,
without the
right?
Defense,
you'd be like the Packers right now. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, we appreciate you guys joining us. We're going to take our first break. When we come back, we'll get into some of the talk between about the Indianapolis offense versus the Dallas defense. We'll be right back. DallasCowboys.com radio.
Todd thought it would be secure to jog in the cheetah savannah. Todd believed the big cat repellent he bought online was reliable. And now Todd is trying to be faster than this cheetah that can run 80 miles per hour. But the good news is Todd has AT&T 5G that is fast, reliable, and secure. And he learned the best thing to do is stop running and toss her the backpack with the beef stew. AT&T 5G. Fast, reliable, secure. It's not complicated.
5G requires compatible plan and device. 5G may not be available in your area. See att.com/5G for you for details.
What do you call a group of grown men and women with their faces painted silver and blue who get together every week to share a three-hour-long ritual of jumping, sinking, and toasting Miller Lite in 10-gallon hats while yelling, "How about them Cowboys?" You call it Miller Time in Dallas. Here's to the Cowboys. Here's to the original light beer. It's Miller time. Celebrate responsibly. 2021 Miller Brewing Company, Fort Worth, Texas.
Want to use what the pros use? How about the official men's skincare brand of the Dallas Cowboys? Jack Black. Right now you can get the Jack Black Starter, a curated collection of Cowboys locker room favorites for just $10 with free shipping. The starter includes four Jack Black skincare favorites plus a full-sized intense therapy lip balm. Go to getjackblack.com/cowboys and use the code word TEAMJB. That's getjackblack.com/cowboys. The Jack Black Starter, $10, free shipping.
When you build, you start with the foundation. And home ownership is a foundation of a stable future. The Bank of America Community Home Ownership Commitment has helped over 34,000 people lay the groundwork so far. With up to $10,000 towards your down payment or 3% of the purchase price, whichever is less, the satisfaction of owning your own place can become a reality. Visit bankofamerica.com/homeowner to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America NA, Equal Housing Lender. Credit and collateral is subject to approval. Restrictions apply. This is not a commitment to lend.
Back to the break.
Give the gift of the Cowboys this holiday season with a Dallas Cowboys United membership. Gift your super fan an annual fan club membership and a fan pack for as little as $20. Tis the season. Learn more at DallasCowboys.com/United.
Welcome back to the second segment of The Break, presented by
Blockchain.com.
Where's the ding?
There we go.
All right, so Derek had to step out and leave for the rest of the show, but we're going to finish. We have to get now into the Indianapolis offense versus the Dallas defense. So, Brian, Derek's first question, as always, what do they do best? What do they do worst?
I think, you know, they've got a really legitimate weapon with their running back with Jonathan Taylor. That's something that, you know, they don't score a lot of points. They haven't. They've struggled on their offensive side of the ball. The one thing that they can do is they will run the football with this guy. And so you have to be ready for it. You know, and with Jonathan Taylor, it's inside, it's outside, it's inside bounce. It's, you know, he's a physical runner. He's not the tallest guy. You know, it's not one of these, you know, big, but he's really thick and he's powerful. And what happens to you is if you don't get a good shot on him or get bodies to them, he will break tackles and continue on. I've seen several games this year where he's just carried the pile going forward, you know, for extra yards and stuff like that. So if you kind of go up and half-heartedly try and tackle him, wrap him up, he'll break that tackle and then he'll find a way to continue on and get yards. There's been some struggle. The offensive line at times, I mean, I watched the Philadelphia game. I've watched the games that they played with Jeff Saturday as the coach, mm-hmm. because that's a different offensive coordinator now with what they've done in the past. But you still have the threat of him running the football. And, you know, that's something I think you're going to have to deal with them. Matt Ryan being the quarterback, they've gone back to him, that Sam Ellinger, he got the opportunity. And then, you know, when Saturday took the job, he said, no, we're going to play with, you know, Matt Ryan gives us the best opportunity to win. The ball's going to come out really, really quick. You know, that's the whole idea. Matt Ryan does not want to hold the football. So everybody with the Cowboys in the secondary, it's going to be about routes, there's going to be, you know, quick routes, the tight ends, the drag routes, things like that underneath. Most of his throws out of the way are to the right. It's either middle to right, the games. I mean, it just seems like that's where he's the most comfortable throwing the football. So we'll see what happens in this game. I like Michael Pittman. He's a big, tall, lanky receiver, likes to run those inside routes. Alec Pierce is another guy that they drafted from Cincinnati. I liked him coming out of the draft. Super tough kid in the way he plays. And then they get Paris Campbell involved, too. Like I say, a lot of routes to the right, a lot of routes in the middle of the field. Their Jelani Woods, their tight end, had a really nice game. If you watched the Monday night game, you saw him. So he had a little bit of a resurgence of, you know, what he was able to do. He was a really good college player. But Quentin Nelson up front at guard is comparable to what you have with Zach Martin. So it's a team that you kind of go, man, their record shouldn't be this bad, but they struggle to score points. But you have to. I would try and take Pittman out of this game and then commit everything to trying to stop Jonathan Taylor from running the ball is what I would do.
When you have a guy like Matt Ryan, and I think the Cowboys have had success with quarterbacks that don't really run a lot,
yeah,
but when the ball gets out quick, where do you think Micah Parsons can be the most effective in that situation?
I would rush him. Like I would say, you know, if you rush him off the what would be the Cowboys' right side, because the ball is going everything. I want if I was the Cowboys, and this would be my plan of attack, I want Matt Ryan seeing Micah Parsons rushing and feel that. And so to me, if you put him on the side where if you put him to what would be Matt Ryan's right, which would be defensive left. Because the games I was watching, the three games I was watching, the ball was, like I say, it was middle right, middle right, middle right the whole game. And so to me, if you rush him where he's throwing, the direction he's throwing, the chances for tip passes, because the ball gets out of his hand quick. It's when people make him hold that's where you see the sacks. That's where you see. So to me, it's not on the back side. You know, it's not on the back side. I even though they've got a rookie left tackle, you know, with Raymond on the back side there, I kind of feel like that they will put him to the side that Ryan's throwing the ball, mm-hmm. so he sees him. But he feels, and if you could get him to hold it, like I said, that's where you're going to get that sack.
So the team, they've allowed more sacks than any other team.
Yeah.
A total of like 43. And my question would be, going back to Nick asking about Micah Parsons, is this where you guys would focus on just pressuring and attacking the quarterback, or do you kind of find a way to split and drive some of that attention on stopping the run?
Yeah, I would. If I'm the Cowboys, I would worry about, because they're going to try and protect Matt Ryan from not getting sacked. And to do that, it's about staying ahead of the chains. It's about like what the, you know, with the, almost what like the teams that have played the Cowboys, they don't want the Cowboys to, like the Packers. The Packers didn't want the Cowboys to put them in second and long, third and long all day. They're like, listen, let's play ahead of the chains. Let's make it second and four, second and three. You know, they're going to try, like I say, if I'm the Colts, I try and run the ball first and say, okay, I'm going to try and stay ahead, stay on schedule. And then that way, maybe the pass rush won't be attacking, won't be, you know, because if they have, like, say, the Minnesota game plan where they just come out and say, we're just going to throw, we're just going to keep throwing, you know, that could be like you're just talking about all those sacks. You know, just it's funny when you watch the sacks, when Ryan, he'll hold it. And you know when he holds it, there's probably going to get sacked. Because it's like he holds it, and now he's having to reset and then deliver the ball. By that time, the rush is on him. He is not the most mobile. Even though we've seen him run, he scrambled for some decent gains, but that's not his game. It's like get the ball out of the hand, try and get it short, and try and attack and drive. You know, teams are making the Colts just try and drive the football and have success doing that, but If you can, I think the way to make the Colts one-dimensional is how your offense plays. You just score and score and score and score. And that puts a lot of pressure. They don't score a lot of points.
Yeah.
So then it turns into now Michael Parsons and these guys getting to rush the passer.
Yeah. People that play fantasy football, they obviously know Jonathan Taylor because he's a great fantasy player, number one pick in a lot of drafts this year. But he doesn't get viewed a lot as, you know, kind of an underrated superstar. Compare him to other running backs, like not so much in the league now, but like his style compared to former backs or just guy. I mean, he's a fast guy. He's a big, compact. I mean,
he's the thing about when you watch him play. The thing that I've always been super impressed by him is he's like 5'10". He's 226 pounds, 228 pounds, and so the quickness and the explosiveness. You know, of these back. I mean, I was thinking
LT?
I was thinking guys like Lawrence. I mean, LT was LaDainian Thomas. I think was a little bit of a little bit shorter guy. Maybe, you know, when you talk about the running styles and stuff like that, I was kind of thinking like a Fred Taylor too from Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. Kind of that little bit of he's quick. He could be explosive. He's hard to bring down.
Amon Green.
But this guy, I mean, the thing about it is how thick he is, and you see the piles move with him. You know, you have to get teams that have made him kind of play sideways, and I mean play sideways like he gets the ball and now he's bouncing and he's still kind of going. It's when he can kind of get his shoulders turned and go forward that he has his best. But, you know, when you talk about – and he catches the ball well too. They'll throw him screens. They'll flip him to him out, you know, in swing routes and stuff like that. So you have to kind of be ready for that as well. Kind of really a complete back for the Colts.
Let's go ahead and take our final break. And when we come back, we'll keep discussing the matchup between – their offense and the Cowboys' defense.
The season is finally here. For months, we've been gearing up to win. Now it's time for the team that performs on any field, United Ag and Turf. With John Deere zero turns for mowing, compact tractors for loading, mini excavators for digging, Gator utility vehicles for hauling, implements for grading, hay tools for baling, United Ag and Turf for winning. The official Ag and Turf equipment supplier of the Dallas Cowboys. Visit UnitedAgandTurf.com for more.
Todd thought it would be secure to jog in the cheetah savanna. Todd believed the big cat repellent he bought online was reliable. And now Todd is trying to be faster than this cheetah that can run 80 miles per hour. But the good news is Todd has AT&T 5G that is fast, reliable, and secure. And he learned the best thing to do is stop running and toss her the backpack with the beef stew. AT&T 5G. Fast, reliable, secure. It's not complicated.
5G requires compatible plan and device. 5G may not be available in your area. See att.com/5G for you for details.
Lil' Sweet!
Did you get to work on time?
Yeah, but I just realized it's Sunday.
Lil' Sweet says head on home. Dr. Pepper's on its way. So sweet, unique. Baby, there's nothing better. I bet you've probably done something that deserves a Dr. Pepper. Did you invest your nest egg in an NFT?
Yeah, and I don't even know what that is.
It's a non-fungible token.
Everyone's done something that deserves a Dr. Pepper.
When you build, you start with the foundation. And home ownership is a foundation of a stable future. The Bank of America Community Home Ownership Commitment has helped over 34,000 people lay the groundwork so far. With up to $10,000 towards your down payment or 3% of the purchase price, whichever is less, the satisfaction of owning your own place can become a reality. Visit bankofamerica.com/homeowner to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America NA, Equal Housing Lender. Credit and collateral is subject to approval. Restrictions apply. This is not a commitment to lend.
Back to the break.
Cowboys are proud to nominate Coach Dan Quinn as the 2022 NFL Salute Service Award Club nominee. Join us in making sure he becomes a finalist for this prestigious award by voting at NFL.com/salutefanvote.
Welcome back to the third segment of The Break presented by Miller Lite, the only beer of the Dallas Cowboys. So earlier, you want a beer?
No, I just did. Instead of the ding, I did the
beer.
The drink.
We
the
need
beer.
A glue, glue, glue sound or something.
I'll work on that.
Yeah, Chris.
That's not.
That's a bad sound.
All right. So, Brian, you kept mentioning how they don't score a lot of points,
no.
Which is true. And just to give people an idea, they've only scored 21 or more points twice the whole season, 34 versus Jacksonville and then 25 against the Rams. They've also...
They win both games? Do you know? Does it say that?
They won one game out of those two.
I'm sure they beat Jacksonville with 34 points. Can't imagine the Jags just rolling that much.
Yeah, they beat the Jaguars, and then where's the other one?
Anyways, that's okay. They don't score a lot of points.
Yeah, that's
they
don't. The point.
Okay.
their drives, you know, they were going into what game was it? There was a point.
It was against the Raiders. I don't know why I say the Rams, but it was they did.
They won that game.
Yeah,
that was Jeff Saturday's first game.
25-20.
Yeah, the thing about they were a team that struggled with opening drives too in games. They didn't. They were struggling. They don't score on opening drives any points at all. That was something that they're dealing with, but. You know, this game for the Cowboys, I think it's really going to be about your offense. I think it's, but you know, you put a lot of pressure, like we just mentioned, like we're talking about. They don't score points. You make them have to keep up. It's going to be hard for them. It's going to be hard. They don't want to play that kind of game. Mm. They really, really don't want to play that kind of game because they've got good receivers. I respect the heck out of Michael Pittman. I did when he came out of college. I think Alec Pierce was one of my guys that I had a really high grade coming out of Cincinnati. You know, they've got guys that are capable of making. They're tall, long guys that can give you problems. They're great contested catchers. They're just not those downfield, you know, type of players. And you know, Matt Ryan, just that's kind of not his game. He used to be able to throw the ball down the field. And you just don't see it as much. Now, maybe after watching some film against Anthony Brown and stuff like that they'll figure out, you know, maybe we need to try, you know, Kiki Kuti and try and just take him on a vertical route and see if he runs past Brown, and we can either get a penalty out of it or make a catch.
I'm going to take you off the rails for a second. I mean, I feel like we've talked about their offense and they struggle, whatever. You've been around the NFL for a long time, and I guess I have too. But like, were you offended by the fact that Jeff Saturday got that head coaching job?
No.
Me either.
I really wasn't. And if I could explain real quick, yeah. I'll try and explain. You know me, I can't explain anything quick. I'm the guy that, me personally, that I look at these jobs for coaches, and it used to be, well, you know, I've never been more wrong about a guy than I was Urban Meyer. Never been more wrong about a guy. I saw Urban Meyer as a program builder, whether it was at Bowling Green, whether it was at Utah, yeah. Whether it was at Florida, whether it was Ohio State. I always saw a program builder there. I saw a guy with a plan and all that. He gets to the NFL, he's an absolute disaster. He doesn't know how to treat people. His demeanor, he thinks he has all the answers. You know, he doesn't know how to treat the players. There's no interaction there. And so here's one of the most highly decorated college coaches in the country, and he goes to a pro team and just completely botches it up. And then so you're thinking like, well, if you got guys like that, you know, we've seen guys like Nick Saban go to the Dolphins 8-8 and then go back to college and just fine. So there are coaches
there
that
2-14 in there as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
with him.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of where you're at, that you think that these guys that are highly touted and prepared and ready and all that, and they get these programs, they get screwed up just as bad as a guy that's never coached. You know, I think there's so much about managing people today in sports and in life. Mm-hmm. I think managing people is a skill that a lot of guys and gals, the ones that have that ability, are going to be successful. And I think Jeff Saturday, you know, to be honest with you, in watching the Colts play, they could have won all three games that Jeff Saturday's coached in. They had Philadelphia on the ropes.
Yeah.
You know, they gave up a late touchdown. You know, the game management, okay, that was in the Monday night game. You saw the lack of game management or time management in that game got him in a little bit of trouble. And he came back afterwards and said, man, I should have used the timeouts.
Yeah.
So that kind of experience. But to be honest with you, they could have won. They won the game against the Raiders. They had Philadelphia on the ropes. If they just, you know, if they don't just kick field goals, if somehow they can score, move the ball and score, you know. And, you know, and they had the Steelers. I mean, they had the Steelers where they needed to have them.
Yeah.
So,
I agree with you there. I know there's a lot of people that think it's and you
prepared
can
coaches can screw this up too.
Yeah, but and you could tell the way McCarthy kind of answered it, where he thinks where he lies on this. You know, as an old school coach, yeah. It's like, you know, there's a coaching tree. There's a lot of guys doing it the right way. But I'll say this, like, will play 10 years in the league and be a 7-8-time Pro Bowler. Yeah. I mean, do that. I mean, they have experience as well. I mean, I get it if you just get handed a job, but, you know, Deion got handed a job.
That's what I was saying. I was just about to say Deion Sanders at Jackson State. And
he's
going to
get a job here.
Yeah, exactly. He's in a situation right now where he, you know, we talk about what, the prime prep and all that, kind of a, you know, kind of a little bit crazy stuff going on there. But he goes to Jackson State with the intent of, what does he do? He gets people to rally around him. He has people that believe in him. He evaluates the right way. His son, it helps his son is probably one of the better quarterbacks in the country right now. You know, it's helping the program. But that's what it takes. It go in there and organize and you know, delegate and make people have responsibility. That's what Jeff Saturday's done. They got rid of the coordinator, they got rid of the head coach, and he made a guy a first-time play caller. Yeah, sure, it's not translating into a lot of points, but he's delegated. Those guys play hard for him, even though he's not. But to your point, he played a lot of years in this league, and he was a Pro Bowl-type player.
Yeah. I know that that's a big storyline with the Colts right now. There's a lot of people offended by that. And
I'm not at all.
I'm not either. But yeah. I mean, there's a lot of elements, a lot of layers to that. And because you said Deion, I'll just say this too. Deion, the exposure that he has created for HBCU schools is
amazing. Yeah.
And that wherever he goes to another place, he's left that landscape much better than it was.
No, the thing about now too with him, he can go in the transfer portals and things like that, where he can go out if he goes to a Power 5. You know, Deion's going to be able to recruit. And so he'll get players to come play for him. They play hard for him.
These kids' dads,
yeah,
they idolize Deion.
Absolutely.
And I bet the kids do, too, because he's still a figure.
Yeah, and to me, that's, you know, again, about the Colts situation, that you don't have to be a guy that has – you don't have to be Bill Walsh as a coach. These coaches come from all walks of life. You know, the guy down in Miami, you know, McDaniel, and what he's doing down there, it's incredible. You know, I mean, his look at his background. Look at his background. I mean, he kind of went along, but he was always kind of the lower tier guy. I was with Sean Payton. You know, Sean Payton, you talk about lower. I mean, Sean Payton was getting coffee for guys in Philadelphia. And now he's, you know, one of the, you know, most decorated and highly recognized coaches. Everybody's background's different when it comes to coaching. And I just think that it's fine. You don't have to have the best guy.
Well, I recently started reading up about that whole situation, and I feel like I don't know enough just yet to even form my own opinion on the subject. But I was curious as to why, when you post the question, Nick, why you use the word offended.
I think because there are coaches that have struggled, and they did it the Sean Payton way.
Yeah,
they were offensive assistants. They were, you know, they're getting coffee. Then they become quality control. Then they become a quarterback's coach, and then maybe they're a play caller. And then
so
they move.
Kind of how you climb.
They
up.
Move themselves up, as opposed to a guy that just played football and he was a great player. And then he goes to ESPN, and next thing you know, they just put him and he just jumps everyone, which. The owner can do whatever he wants.
It's about people.
And I agree with the people part.
Yeah, it's about people. If you can organize people and get them to share the belief that you have, they don't have to completely agree with everything you say. But if you get people all pulling the same way, there's a lot of things you can get done if you have that kind of support. But you have to have that ability to be a leader. And Jeff Saturday is a leader.
Have you seen that clip? And they played it for years. The clip with Saturday and Payton. And Payton's like, "We'll call the plays, Jeff." And he's over there. Let's run the ball. And then they're getting at it on the sideline. Yeah. And Payton's like, "He started it." If you're standing up to Peyton Manning, you know.
It's funny. Jeff Saturday never got off the bench. He just kind of looked at him like, "Okay, you can go stand over there somewhere."
Yeah,
you know, we're fine here. Just we'll make adjustments. We'll be good. I have a lot of respect. Like I said, I can understand coaches that want to go up through the ranks. But there's a lot of coaches that have gone up through the ranks and failed at this thing, too.
And it happens. It's not just in football. You see that in other types of, like, industries around the world.
Yeah.
Like, that happens with other people. And it's just kind of who you know and where you come from and all that. And some people do get to kind of jump over all those steps and get there.
It can be expensive making mistakes.
Yeah.
And I know we'll finish up here, but Auburn, you know, Auburn University, and I hope I'm not offending anybody from Auburn, but you've had 3 coaches in 4 years. That's pretty expensive. That's millions of dollars spent, you know, having to now pay coaches off for not getting the right guy or not having the patience. You know, they think you have the right guy. You know, and you know they went out and hired a coach that has got some baggage to his name from when he was last in the SEC. But that just shows you they're thinking we have to win. You know, sometimes you make those mistakes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, tomorrow we'll kind of flip the side of the things. We'll talk about the Colts defense versus
make some
the
plays
Cowboys
on these guys.
Offense,
yeah.
And we'll see how that matchup kind of looks like for this weekend. And this is the end of the show. For Nikki Eamon, Brian Broaddus, Derek Eagleton, who stepped out a little bit earlier, I'm Ember Garcia. This has been The Break on DallasCowboys.com Radio.
This has been a production of DallasCowboys.com and the Dallas Cowboys Football Club.
How about you, Cowboys? Yeah!